The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
Well, welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show, EDU edition. It stands for education, where we dive deeper than normal into one particular topic. Sometimes those topics are prompted by a question via email or a phone call from one of our listeners. Other times it's just a topic that we decide is particularly relevant for retirement planning and something we want to dig deeper into. Today's topic is going to be from a listener email, and it has to do with the five-year rule as pertains to Roth IRAs, including Roth conversions. And like many people, and Congress is a bit to blame here, there's a lot of confusion around to what is referred to as the five-year rule. The fascinating thing about the five-year rule is it's actually made up of a couple of different rules. There's a couple of different five-year rules that just coincidentally are both 5 years in length but apply to different aspects of a Roth IRA. So thanks for joining us. My name's Chris Stein. I'm here with Jim Saulnier. Jim's highlighting a few things that he wants to share with us on this particular topic, but this did come in as an email, which we do welcome your emails that prompt us for topics on the EDU show. This is the first time, actually, that someone has specifically requested that we cover this on an EDU show. EDU show being quite young now. I think we're in episode 6 or something at this point, so it hasn't been around a long time compared to our Q&A show that's been around for many years. And this is the first show where Jim is joining us, so he's not sure how his microphone works.
Oh, you always say that. I shut my for those who don't know, because he likes throwing me under the bus. I shut the microphone off after we finish recording the Q&A show.
You do?
And then I usually go reheat my coffee. And then when I come back, I always forget to turn the mic back on to record the EDU show.
That's true.
All right.
Thus the bus throwing under.
Thus
the underthrowing
thus
of the bus.
Problem. That is the problem. But this is our first Q&A show. Excuse me, not our first Q&A show. It is our first TNA Q&A.
We'll cut that out.
Freudian slip there. But you're looking at me funny.
No.
Okay. You can keep that in. This is the podcast. Nobody cares. But shows you where my mind is. But this is our first Q&A show, not you-know-what show, where we got a question on EDU. Well, how did I even say Q&A?
I don't know. It's stuck in your mind because we just did the Q&A show. The Q&A show is over today.
Wow.
We're on EDU
I just totally muffed this whole pot up. Sorry, listeners.
Why don't we just dive into Roth IRAs?
Yes, let's get right into what this question is. This is our first EDU question, not Q&A question.
Nailed it.
Got it. Beautiful. But in fact, the title of this is EDU Topic Request.
Ideal.
Doesn't get any better than this. So the EDU show, this is not a Q&A show. This is an EDU show. We're going to dive deep into a topic, and the topic we're going to dive deep into is the Roth five-year rules, which adds a lot of confusion, least of which to this email question, which is rife with some misunderstandings of the Q&A, the
five-year rule
Q&A. Okay, so it begins, hello, Jim and Chris. I was wondering if you could go over the various different five, wouldn't that be various and different little
That's a little redundant.
A little redundancy there?
That's okay.
If you go over the various different five-year rules as they relate to Roth IRAs, Roth conversions, as an EDU topic.
Perfect. We're doing that right now.
We are doing it right now. Okay. He begins. I have heard different information regarding the five-year rule, especially as it relates to Roth conversions, having their own separate five-year rule. I have heard that if you do a Roth conversion from a traditional IRA into a Roth IRA, you will reset the clock on that IRA, so you have to avoid doing that by doing a Roth conversion into a separate Roth IRA. But after doing a lot of research online, I don't think that is correct. Since I can no longer contribute directly to a Roth IRA, should I do a traditional Roth IRA conversion into a fresh new Roth IRA? So I can track each conversion's five-year rule separately? Or does that really not help, since all Roth accounts are treated like one big one? So he's got a lot of misunderstanding of the Roth five-year rule. So I'm just going to, I'm not going to read the rest of his email. It's very long, and it would be very confusing to people. He gets into a lot of different scenarios, and I'm just going to explain what the five-year rule is and how it works. Because there are two separate five-year rules with Roth IRAs. Let's talk about the first one. And that is the basic rule that in order to take your money out, in order to take out the growth from your Roth IRA, in order to take out the growth on a contribution, what is that five-year rule? Because it is a separate and distinct five-year rule from the five-year rule on a conversion. The first part to understand on a Roth IRA is the money you put in. The money you put in can come out at any time for any reason, no taxes, no penalties.
More specifically, I'll add that the money you put in via a contribution, because some people get a little confused here thinking, when I convert, I'm putting money in, so how is that different? Very specifically, we're talking about money that went in the standard way, if you will, through contributions into the Roth following the contribution rules.
Correct. So Chris is 100% right on that, and let's just assume, because you're allowed to put in, depending on your age, $5,500 to $6,500 a year into a Roth IRA under current laws, into the Roth. If you're under the age of 50, you're allowed to put in $5,500. If you're over the age of 50, $6,500. That money can come out at any time for any reason, no taxes, no penalties. And that surprises a lot of people. There's a lot of misinformation on that.
Yep.
But your contributions can come out any time for any reason, no taxes, no penalties. Mm-hmm. Had to catch my thoughts there. But how do you get the growth out? How do you get the money out that is growing inside a Roth? Well, that money, in order to get that out, you have to take it as what is known in the industry as a qualified distribution. What is a qualified distribution? A qualified distribution has two parts to it. The first part is that the Roth is at least 5 years old. Mm-hmm. And that's the first five-year rule that we're going to cover on contributions. And that simply means a lot of misinformation on this, Chris. A lot of people think you have to contribute to your Roth for 5 years. That is so not true. What it simply means is that you opened. You don't even have to have put anything in it. You just opened a Roth IRA. Now, the fact of the matter is, you're not going to find a custodian that's probably going to let you just open a Roth and not put anything in it. But literally, you just have to open and essentially be a participant in the Roth IRA program. The Roth IRA. You have a Roth. I opened a Roth. Literally, you do not have to put anything in. But again, as I said, you're not going to find a custodian that is going to allow you to open an account and not put anything in. So you just have to open it. There are some custodians out there, I won't name them, but will let you open a Roth I've seen for as little as a few hundred dollars. $250 is the smallest I've ever seen. So you could literally open a Roth in 2018, Chris, for $250, put nothing else in it, and in 5 years, satisfy the five-year rule.
Yeah, and technically in the fifth calendar year, that's even more specific, that when you don't have to wait exactly 5 years, you have to wait, if you put, you open it in 2018, anytime during 2018, you get credit for that entire year.
Absolutely.
As it being open.
Technically speaking, Chris, the five-year rule is a three-year and eight-month rule. Because you could open and fund a Roth. Let's say you funded the Roth January 1st of 2018. You wouldn't be able to do it on the 1st. It's a holiday. January 2nd, 2018. Now, you would only have to wait until January 2nd of 2023.
Mm-hmm.
However, any contribution made to a Roth prior to April 15th can be applied for the previous tax year. So if you didn't put any money in a Roth and you put money in on January 2nd, obviously you're just trying to get the five-year rule status. You never even opened the Roth. You can say this is actually for a January 1st, 2017 contribution.
Yep.
So it's already 1 year old by the time you even do it.
Right.
Yep. So when you add it all up, it can actually be as little as 3 years and eight months.
Mm-hmm.
To satisfy the five-year rule. Now, that said, once you have the Roth open for 5 years, you could close your Roths and have none. And you've satisfied the five-year rule. Mm-hmm. You have been a participant in the Roth program for five years.
Yep.
There's no rule that you have to keep the Roths open. There's no rule that you have to be constantly putting money in. It doesn't start over. He's under this impression that the Roth five-year rule keeps starting over. That is so not true. In fact, no one is really checking on this. Custodians aren't checking on this. The IRS really isn't checking on this. Now, they technically could, because they're going to get, what is it called, the 5498? Is that the one that the custodian sends when you participate and put a contribution in? So I think it's Google 5498. I think that's the one. I always get confused on these IRS forms. But the custodian does send a form to the IRS acknowledging when you actually fund an IRA. So technically speaking, if the IRS did keep good records, they would be able to hopefully determine when you opened that Roth. But don't bank that they're keeping such accurate records. Once you satisfy the five-year rule, though, that never goes away. It sticks with you for life. It's like flies on you know what. It's like toilet paper stuck to the bottom of your shoe. It doesn't go away anywhere.
Right.
You've seen that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It's just gum, maybe might have been a better word. Gum stuck to the bottom of your shoe. Is it 5498?
It is. That's what IRA contribution information is reported on. You usually get a copy of it for your own information. You don't file it yourself with you don't send it in with your tax return. It's just for your information. But the custodian has sent the information to the IRS.
Right. So your five-year rule also is not per account, folks. It's aggregated. Once you have one IRA that's 5 years old, Roth IRA that's 5 years old, every Roth IRA, the second you open it, is considered 5 years old.
Right. That's because of the rule that you only have one Roth IRA. No matter if you have it split up into multiple accounts at multiple custodians, in the eyes of the IRS, it's one big old IRA. So there's only one date that it started, and only, therefore, one five-year rule for contributions and earnings coming out potentially tax-free if they meet the other qualifications as a or requirements to be a qualified distribution, which is where you kind of started on this tirade, if you will, where Jim mentioned the first of two factors that determine a qualified distribution, allowing you to get the earnings or growth in a Roth out tax-free and potentially penalty-free. You want to go on to the second category that must
I
be
will,
met?
I will, for the qualified distribution. The first rule is 5 years, and we've already walked through that.
Yep.
So fairly straightforward, folks. If you listen to this podcast again, you'll get it down pat. The second qualifying part is the money be, excuse me, the first part is, again, the Roth has to be at least 5 years old. The second part is you have to be over the age of 59 and a half, or you have to be dead. That's not a very good one, but death is, and, you know, you're gone, but death is one of the ways to get money out on growth tax-free. That's what we're trying to do on a qualified distribution. Get the growth out tax-free. Because the contribution can be removed at any time, any reason, no taxes, no penalty.
No death required.
How do you get the growth out? Well, you're over the age of 59 and a half. Growth can come out tax-free, assuming the Roth is 5 years old. You die. Growth can come out tax-free, assuming the Roth is at least 5 years old. You become disabled. Again, not a very good option, but if you became disabled. Or you're buying a first-time home. Those are the four main reasons. And the first-time home is to get up to $10,000 of growth out tax-free. Remember, the money you put in can come out at any time for any reason, no taxes, no penalties. But they'll allow you to take out $10,000 of earnings if you're going to use it as part of your home down payment. Now, that's not really used as much as it sounds, because to amass $10,000 of earnings, that's could take a very long time when you're only allowed to put in a few thousand dollars a year.
Right. And some people might say, oh yeah, plus if I'm buying my first home, I'm probably young, but they forget what the definition of
first-time
home buyer is. And since we're digging a little deeper than normal in here, I'll mention it. It actually means you just haven't been a homeowner for the past 2 years. So you can be a first-time home buyer, but also not be a first-time home buyer. So, meaning that you could be on your third or fourth home, actually, and as long as you haven't owned a home for the past 2 years, you qualify for the first-time home buyer exclusion on this part of the rule. So maybe we'll talk about that on another EDU show, but wanted to throw that out there.
Okay. So that's the five-year rule. I think we covered it
on basic
well.
Contributions and the earnings, etc. So I think that one, and that's, think of that as a standalone five-year rule that applies to the Roth in general.
Okay. So another thing to remember, because death is an exemption to the five-year rule, beneficiaries can take money out even if the Roth is not quite 5 years old. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Is that part? Okay. All right. So what is then the five-year rule for conversions? Now, that's something totally different. The first five-year rule is to exempt the principal, excuse me, not the principal. Principal is always removed tax-free. Your contributions can come out anytime, any reason, no taxes, no penalties. The first five-year rule is to get the growth in that Roth out 100% tax-free. That is, again, driven by age. Yes, you have to be over the age of 59 and a half, and the Roth needs to be open for 5 years. But there is another five-year rule, and that is on conversions. And that's to exempt the Roth distribution from the 10% early withdrawal penalty. Totally different purpose of the second five-year rule. It applies to just conversions. Because the IRS, and I would have to say Congress, they're privy. They're not dumb. They're on to games. Because the money you put in can come out at any time for any reason, no taxes, no penalties, and Chris had to go out and specifically say he was talking, or we are talking, contributions, not conversions. What if the IRS and Congress never made the second five-year rule on conversions? If you had a regular IRA and you were under the age of 59 and a half and you wanted to take $1,000 out of it, say, your tax advisor would say, well, you're going to have to pay income taxes on that $1,000 and a 10% early withdrawal penalty because you are under the age of 59 and a half. Well, if they never had this special rule on Roths for conversions, savvy people would say, well, wait a minute. Rather than taking the money out of my traditional IRA, I'm going to convert it. And I am going to take the $1,000, put it in a Roth IRA, pay income taxes on that, just like I would do if I was withdrawing it. But now the money is coming out of a Roth, and my contributions can always be removed at any time for any reason, no taxes, no penalty, and I'll avoid
the 10% penalty.
Exactly.
In this case. So it doesn't avoid the taxes. And the money that gets into the Roth, whether it was via a conversion or a contribution, taxes have been paid on that money already. So it's not to avoid the taxes, this strategy that can't work but would be potential if the second five-year rule wasn't in existence, is to avoid the 10% penalty you'd usually face by taking money out of your traditional IRA. So now this conversion gets attached, or this five-year rule, the second kind, gets attached to the conversion dollars specifically. So even if your Roth is over 5 years old, now kicks in this extra five-year waiting period for you to be able to remove that money without the 10% early withdrawal penalty. But go ahead.
Yeah. No. I'll let you continue.
And it is on every conversion. So unlike the first five-year rule, where once you satisfy it, it satisfies all your Roths, all the contributions forever and ever, amen, every conversion has its own lump sum amount must be tracked because it has its own five-year rule, but they're independent. When you do a second conversion, maybe a year later after the first one, it doesn't reset the five-year rule on all converted dollars. Each conversion, and this is where it becomes a pain in the butt if you are doing lots of conversions and plan to take money out before the five-year is satisfied, the second five-year rule, you're going to have to track the five-year rule individually for each batch of converted dollars that you bring over.
And here's where the five-year rules start to conflict with each other.
Yeah.
Death is an exemption to the 10% early withdrawal penalty, but death is not an exemption to the five-year hold to get principal out. And that confuses a lot of people. So they're going to have to, let's back up to contributions again, folks. Somebody contributes to a Roth, a brand new Roth in 2018, dies 3 years later in 2021. Somebody inherits it. And that person has to begin taking required minimum distributions the following year when the Roth is only 4 years old. Mm-hmm. Technically, the earnings will still be subject for taxes until one more year. There will be no early withdrawal penalty on withdrawals. The 10% early withdrawal penalty is waived for death, but it is not waived for the five-year rule to get earnings out. However, because contributions are always deemed to be removed first, whether they're being removed by the IRA owner or the beneficiary who inherits it, if the person who inherited it, Chris, is only taking the required minimum distribution, there's no way they're dipping into growth, so there's no problem satisfying that one more year right. wait.
But people that withdraw the whole thing
would need to wait until the Roth hits its 5 years. So that can get a little confusing. That's probably the most confusing part of the five-year rule because you think, well, wait a minute. Why does it go away for the early withdrawal penalty but not for the five-year hold? I don't know. Write to Congress. They wrote the rules. So I just wanted to point out that little sticky gotcha. Okay. So the five-year rule for conversions was specifically done to keep people from pulling a fast one. But where it confuses people is if you convert over the age of 59 and a half, don't worry about it.
Right, because they don't have to protect the people from strategizing to avoid the early withdrawal penalty, because once you reach 59 and a half, there wouldn't have been an early withdrawal penalty.
Precisely. So there's nothing to worry about. If you convert after the age of 55, don't worry about it.
Right.
Excuse me, after the age of 59 and a half, don't worry about it. It goes away. Anyways, the 10% early withdrawal penalty goes away after you reach the age of 59 and a half. Not the year you turn 59 and a half. You actually have to surpass 59 and a half. 180 days after your 59th birthday, do you satisfy it? So wait till 181 or 182, but just after you get past that, or die. If you die, it goes away to your beneficiaries, but not the 5-year rule on contributions. That can be a little confusing. That sticks after death. Just one of those odd things. I don't know why they
have
that.
And if you convert at, say, 57...
You just got 2.5 years.
You only have 2.5 years. So it's one way or another, this 5-year rule on conversions becomes irrelevant once you reach age 59 and a half. So we don't know much about this person's story, but sometimes people are overly concerned about the 5-year rules when, in fact, it's really not part of their plan or going to affect them. If you're not planning to take money out until after 59 and a half, none of this matters other than the original 5-year rule. The original 5-year rule, if you don't open your first Roth IRA until you're 58 years old, that initial 5-year rule on the earnings is going to extend into your 60s, the getting earnings out. But like Jim mentioned, Roth rules for distribution are very specific. Principal is going to come out first, so the chance that you're dipping all the way into earnings before your 5-year rule is satisfied is usually quite low, unless you're deciding to take it all out very, very quickly and you were a procrastinator and never opened your Roth until your late 50s. You might run into an issue with the initial 5-year rule, that first one we described, after you reach 59 and a half. But for most people who are thinking about a Roth, they're going to do it way before they're 59 and a half.
And that's one thing I want to point out, Chris, because I'm going to read some more of his question in a second. But I also want to point out to our listeners, as we delve deep into this 5-year rule, if you are worried about having to take money out of a Roth within 5 years, maybe you shouldn't be putting money in a Roth or converting. Yeah. I think this is overanalyzed, over-worried about for no reason. Yeah. It kind of reminds me when we were talking a couple weeks ago on one of the first EDU shows, somebody had on income annuities, and they were wondering if they should buy an income annuity and then also put on a protection that if they die too soon, so they can get a refund if all their money hasn't been returned to them. And I said, this is kind of a double negative. It's like the two opposite ends of a magnet pushing against each other. You're going to buy a product that's going to give you longevity protection, pay you income from as long as you live. So you would buy an income annuity if you have longevity. And then you're going to put a protection in case you die too soon. Makes no sense. Roth IRAs are the same to me, because they truly are an account that you should hold for a hell of a long time and let it grow tax-free. That's the real benefit, especially on a conversion, Chris. You're not going to convert and then start taking the money out in a year or two or three. Kind of defeats the purpose, maybe, of converting. So a Roth should be a long-term hold, and the 5-year rule is immaterial. If you think you're going to need your money within 5 years, what are you putting it in a Roth for? What are you converting it for?
There are cases where it does make sense.
There are, but
there's some timing of recognizing income in certain years to optimize your tax situation. So, but those are very few and far between. We don't run across that very often.
No.
So for most people, they're just getting all wrapped up. I think their concern is, wow, there's these things and it's confusing. I need to understand this so I don't make a mistake. People are overanalyzing this and are over worried about it. I totally agree with Jim. The vast, vast majority of people with Roths are never going to have to worry about either of these 5-year rules. So while it's good to basically understand it, It would only be of concern if you, say, are suddenly faced with a life change that causes you to want to take money out of a Roth a lot sooner than you expected, very quickly after putting it in. Then you should be investigating these rules, make sure you're working with someone. Your custodian should be able to clarify these things for you, although some of them have some questionable advice, right? So, but anybody competent with IRA should have a firm understanding of these things and be able to help you. But unless you're in that situation, don't forget about it. It's not something that is even worth concerning yourself. It's not going to affect the vast majority of people with Roths.
So another thing, though, about the conversion five-year rule, each conversion does have its own five-year rule. Unlike the five-year rule for contributions, where you just got to satisfy it once and you're good to go, the IRS and the government, the Congress, were on to that little trick. If they had that same rule, Chris, for conversions, someone would convert a little bit, get a conversion Roth going, get the five-year rule satisfied for that, and then later on transfer money, you know, convert more money into it and just withdraw it right away and avoid the 10% early withdrawal penalty. So to avoid that, each conversion has its own five-year rule. This listener was wondering, does he need to create new conversion Roths? No.
He was worried that every conversion would reset the clock on all previous conversions.
Nope.
And like I said before,
only is on that conversion.
Yeah, very important to understand that piece.
So keeping good records is important. If you think you're going to end up taking money out within 5 years of converting or under the age of 59 and a half, understanding Roth liquidation rules is very important. The government considers the first dollars to be removed. The first dollars to be removed are always, always contributions first. So you have to keep very good records on all the money you contributed to a Roth, because Roth contributions, unlike traditional IRA contributions, are not reported on your 1040. Nothing goes on your 1040 indicating to the government that you put money in a Roth. It is solely up to you to track. And that is essentially basis. The money you put in, the government considers basis. And you have to track it. And as you start removing money from a Roth, you have to file Form 8606 and track that money. And show the government the money coming out first is your contributions. And you track that on Form 8606 when you remove it. But there is no form you ever file with your taxes showing money going in. So you would either keep your Form 5498 or you would keep your confirmation statement from your IRA custodian. Or if you're doing your taxes, you would report, especially if you're using a software program, you would report it in the software program. I know when Justin was here doing taxes, and now it's Jack who's going to be doing taxes for our tax preparation clients, Chris, our software program has a place to enter Roth contributions. Why do we do that? It doesn't go on the 1040 anywhere. It's because the software program is tracking basis for us. Mm-hmm. So if we ever need, if a client came back to us in 5 years and says, oh, how much money did I put into my Roth? We'll have it because the software is keeping track of that. And when we have to file Form 8606, the software already has it. The software has the basis information already, and it can start filing and tracking on 8606 because the first dollars removed, the first dollars removed is always contributions. Once all contributions have been removed, and again, you track that on 8606, folks, and there is no place you record contributions. So track that yourself. And if you're not and you're relying on the custodian, you're playing Russian roulette because custodians may not be keeping good tax records. I've called some custodians for clients and they're clueless, Chris.
I don't know. We don't have anything on that.
And then there's other custodians who are all on top of it and they know exactly what you put in. So once you satisfied and took out all your contributions first, the next dollars that come out are conversions. Here again, you got to keep good records. When you convert, though, you're going to start tracking conversions a little bit differently. But conversions are the next dollars to come out of the Roth in the order they happened. So the oldest conversions come out first. So if it's 2018 and you've been converting since 2013 and you have no more contributions left, conversions come out first, Chris, and it would be the 2013 conversions first, which are already 5 years old in this example. So there are no 10% early withdrawal penalties associated with the 2013 conversion. Excuse me. But if you get into the 2014, 2015, 2016 conversion and you are under the age of 59 and a half, now the 10% early withdrawal penalty is going to arise. And then once conversions are taken out, the last dollars to come out is the growth. So it's always contributions, then conversions in the order that was converted, and then growth. So keeping good records with Roths is crucial. And it all begins, folks, with keeping track of every contribution you made. But again, the reason why each conversion has its own five-year rule, the government is looking for people to prevent them from gaming the system if they're under 59 and a half and they want to take money out without paying the early withdrawal penalty. So they can't say, oh, you can just have 1 5-year conversion and then every conversion is considered 5 years. It doesn't work that way.
The good news for all this tracking, what he described was sounded like a tracking nightmare. It might discourage someone from opening up a Roth.
Computers do it.
Computers do it. But like we said before, if you are well past the 5-year rules,
don't worry about it.
Nobody even cares anymore.
Nope.
None of this matters. It's all going to come out. Don't have to worry about tracking this, that, or the other thing. It's all going to come out tax-free, penalty-free. For the vast majority of traditional uses of the Roth IRA, withdrawing money off into your 60s, 70s, and 80s, it's not going to, none of this is going to matter.
Right. Tracking basis or tracking your contributions into a Roth essentially goes away after the age of 59 and a half.
Right.
Because to get growth out, you have to be, remember, folks, over the age of 59 and a half, dead, disabled, or buying a first-time home, and your Roth has to be 5 years old. Now, if you opened your Roth at age 50, you have to wait to age, excuse me, if you opened it at age 59, you weren't quite 59 and a half, you have to wait to 64 to satisfy that first five-year rule. But for most people, Chris, they're not opening a Roth at age 59.
Correct.
No, they're not doing that. So, yeah, even though I painted a nightmare of tracking, it's only if you're going to take money out of a Roth prior to age 59 and a half is it really an issue. And the five-year rule on each individual conversion and tracking each one of those, the financial press, as you said, paints a nightmarish picture of this. And it doesn't matter after 59 and a half. And if you're never going to take money out of your Roth prior to that, don't worry about it. You're worrying over nothing. It's like spilt milk. Don't worry about it. Move on. It's only if you are going to take money out prior to 59 and a half, really, is this a problem.
Right.
All right, you think that was enough on the five-year rule?
I think...
Oh, let me get back to one of his questions, though, because I don't want him to say, hey,
well, this isn't the
answered.
Q&A show, as long as it's consistent with this
it is.
Topic.
It is.
Perfect.
So he goes on, he says, here's the situation that led me down this path of writing to you. Back in March of this year, 2018... when I did my 2017 taxes, I discovered I made too much money to contribute to a Roth. Not in an unheard-of situation that happens all the time. I had already made my full $5,500 contribution by that point. I decided rather than trying to calculate how much I could contribute because of the phase-outs, and what he's talking about there, listeners, is he's essentially saying he made too much to contribute the full $5,500, but he still made too little to be totally wiped out from contributing anything, and he didn't feel like doing the math work to see how much he could actually contribute. So he says, rather than do that, he recharacterized his 2017 contribution into a traditional IRA. Not unheard of to do. He simply told his custodian, take that money that I put in the Roth, recharacterize it to an IRA. Now, listeners might be saying, wait a minute, Jim, recharacterizations went away. No, they didn't. Recharacterizations went away for conversions, but recharacterizations did not go away for contributions. So he recharacterized his 2017 contribution, Chris, into a non-deductible 2017 IRA. Same tax implication, because you can't deduct the money going into a Roth, and he couldn't deduct the money going into a non-deductible IRA. So that was a smart move he did, recharacterizing it. Perfectly legal. Recharacterizations have not gone away for Roth contributions, only Roth conversions. Okay? So then he goes on to say, then 30 days later, I asked the custodian to convert the entire traditional IRA balance into my Roth IRA. So that, again, is perfectly legitimate, and the 30-day wait is perfectly legitimate. When you recharacterize, you have to wait 30 days or to January 1st of the year after the contribution, whatever is later. Well, it's already past January 1st because he did this in 2017 and it was 2018, so he had to wait 30 days. So he did all that right.
Yep.
So his question is, did I just reset the clock on my Roth IRA that I opened in 2002 and now it is only considered 2018?
Nope.
No.
No resetting of that clock. That clock is done, satisfied forever and ever. He doesn't have to satisfy what he's referring to as, and what we call that first five-year rule. That's done. He satisfied that back in 2007 or 6, depending on when he
put the 2000
in there. But
then he asked, did my recharacterization and then conversion into a Roth ruin my ability to make a 2018 Roth IRA, excuse me, 2018 IRA contribution to then convert into a Roth?
Nope. Didn't prevent that at all. Because what he recharacterized was his 2017 contribution that he made to the Roth, realized he made a mistake in March of 2018, undid it, essentially recharacterized. And that still counted as a 2017 Roth, or sorry, traditional IRA contribution after he got it recharacterized. The conversion then has no effect on his ability to do future contributions. So as long as he doesn't make too much money in 2018, he could contribute directly. Otherwise, he could do what he did ultimately for 2017, which is make a non-deductible contribution into his traditional IRA and then do the backdoor situation again.
Right. Because when you do a recharacterization, listeners, which is what he did, the IRS assumes, remember, he put the money in 2017. He recharacterized it, though, in 2018. And then he converted it into a Roth 30 days later, also in 2018. But it's all considered a 2017. The IRS considers the recharacterization, even though it was done in 2018, to be as if he put money into a traditional IRA in 2017.
Right. The recharacterization essentially goes back and makes the effective date of that transaction back to when the original transaction occurred, in this case for him back in 2017, essentially saying, no, that went the wrong direction. It went to the Roth. I wanted instead to have gone to the traditional IRA. IRS looks at it as if it actually happened back then.
They look at it as if it always went into the IRA. And they pretend the Roth was never
part of
even
it.
There.
Right. And then conversions have no effect on your ability to make future contributions. Conversions are their own thing. There's no limit on those. It doesn't reduce your limit for the $5,500 or $6,500 contributions that might happen in subsequent years. Separate separate transactions, no contamination there or worry.
Continuing with the backdoor Roth contribution, do I need to make sure I make my traditional non-deductible IRA contributions and complete the Roth conversion by December 31st of each tax year from now on? If so, why? That was his question, not mine. Mm-hmm. Do you want to answer it or you want me to get that one?
Go ahead. We'll see how short you can make this because it's a short answer.
Now you put me under the gun. Yes, you have to do it by December 31st for one simple reason, listener, or listeners in total. You have to convert by December 31st for the tax year you want the conversion to apply. There is no converting. Contributions can be made up till April 15th of the following tax year for the previous tax year. Conversions do not operate the same way. You want a 2018 conversion to count on your 2018 taxes, you must convert December 31st of 2018. But if you want a contribution to count on your 2018 taxes, you have until April 15th of the following tax year. How's that?
Pretty good. But I think you read a little bit, unless I missed it. So read that last little question again, because I was going to answer it slightly differently
and
for
why?
A different reason. No. Read the whole question, the last question.
Do I need to make sure I make my traditional IRA contributions and complete the Roth conversion by December 31st of each year from now on, and why?
You don't have to. You can convert anytime you want. Aligned with what Jim said, you do the conversion in the year you want the tax implications to apply. So I think he's thinking there's some requirement that he does
contribution I see
and then immediately in the same year have to do the conversion.
No.
He doesn't have to. If he for some reason wants to put off the recognition of that income for tax purposes, the conversion,
correct,
creating this tax burden, to a following year, way later even, he has every right to do so. There's no requirement that it's he's thinking, I think, like it's a hot potato. Like it can only be in the traditional IRA until the end of the year, and then I got to get
but
it out.
But what
of
I would say, folks, is there is no tax reason not to convert immediately, and you would want to. There is no tax reason not to convert immediately. Because he is putting money in a non-deductible IRA. And then if he waits, and I don't know why he would, if he waits, the growth will be subject to taxes on the conversion. But now that the IRS has officially approved the backdoor Roth contribution strategy, you should put the money in on Monday and convert it on Tuesday. So it's a 100% tax-free conversion. So I can't see any reason not to convert right away.
Most of the time, absolutely. I was picturing he puts it in early in the year. There's growth in there by the end of the year. He's got a question. Do I want that growth to be subject to taxes in my current year or later on?
I would just convert right away and there's no growth.
That absolutely will done it. But as far as requiring you to do it, there's no requirement, but the strategy almost always will lead to you wanting to do it
absolutely. As
fast as possible so that any potential growth in there can happen tax-free.
Right. Because remember, listeners, he's putting the money in. It's after-tax money. The way this whole backdoor Roth contribution works, people who earn more than a certain amount cannot contribute to a Roth. He obviously earns more than that. He's already said that. But anybody, Bill Gates himself, and no, it's actually Jeff Bezos now who still is working. Bill Gates doesn't work anymore. So Jeff Bezos, right? Isn't that his name? The Amazon guy.
Yeah,
Jeff
Amazon Bezos. Guy. Mm-hmm.
So he is the richest man in the world. He can put money in a non-deductible IRA. He's over the age of 50. He can put $6,500 in a non-deductible IRA and immediately convert it into a Roth. Even though he couldn't contribute $6,500, as long as he doesn't have an existing IRA that will blow up with the pro rata rule, he could do this as well. Mm-hmm. But he would want to do it right away. So when he says, is there a time limit? My point is, Chris is right. From a tax perspective, no, you can convert in any year you want the taxes to happen. But if you don't want any taxes to happen, I would literally put the money in on a Monday, and as soon as it's in there, call up the custodian the very next day and say, convert it. So there is right. no growth. And this is totally okay. The IRS has approved it. Congress has said in the Tax Cut and Job Act, it's okay. And the IRS came out a few months ago, and we talked about this on the radio show, and they blessed the strategy.
Right.
There are some CPAs even to this day who don't know this, and they're still saying, step doctrine rule. You got to wait at least a year, or you can't do it. No, tell that CPA to go pound tar. There's no problem with the back door.
Exactly.
Okay.
So I guess I was just, when he said required, wanted to make sure he understood it's not a requirement, but recommended that he do it, not just by the end of the year, but immediately. Jim's absolutely correct on that strategy-wise.
And then he ends with, sorry, I didn't mean for this to be such a long topic suggestion. I liked it.
I did, because everything was kind of related ultimately to five-year rules. And then we threw in a little bit of a conversion question in there.
Well, that's what the EDU show is all about. We're going to dive deep into this topic, and that's what we wanted to do on today's show, dive deep into the five-year rule based on this question. I do want our listeners to know if you have, I never thought of asking listener questions for an EDU topic. I don't want a simple, you can send me one for EDU, and if we think we can answer it in 10 words or less, it's going on the Q&A show, or maybe in 10 paragraphs or less. We'll put that, or 10 minutes or less.
Right.
We'll put that on the EDU show, not the EDU show,
Q&A show.
Q&A show, because we're trying to get through five or six on every Q&A show, and the shows we try to limit now to just 60 minutes each. But if you have a topic that you want us to delve deep into, to start going down deep into something, feel free to send it to us. He sent this email to jim@jimhelps. That's jim@jimhelps.com, jim@jimhelps.com. He also sent it to chris@jimhelps.com, so you can do that as well. But Chris is five letters. Jim is only three. So you can type less by getting
far less wear and tear
on
your keyboard.
Far less wear and tear. That's two less letters. But he put in the subject, EDU subject request. So maybe if you put EDU in the subject line, I'll know that this is an email for the EDU show. Mm-hmm. And we can delve deep into a topic that other listeners may have. But I've got tons of great EDU topics to go over from the Ed Slot program that I was at. Ed covered a lot in our last group meeting, and some good IRA topics that we're going to delve deep into on the EDU show. So no big deal if we don't get any EDU emails, but I thought this listener was on to something.
This is a great one. One we haven't talked about for a while.
No, we haven't talked about the five-year rule for a while, but this is what we want to do on the EDU show, folks. Hopefully you enjoyed it today. And if you have any questions, comments, or obscene remarks, don't hesitate to email us, and we'll take care of at least a question or a comment. The obscene remarks will probably just get deleted. But we also want to point out to our listeners that we are living, breathing financial planners here in the state of Colorado, but we do work with people throughout the United States. So if you have any questions or doubts or concerns about your retirement, our specialty here at the firm is retirement planning. That's all we do. It is not a bullet point on our website. It is all we do. It is our niche. It is our specialty. And we are distribution planners. We say all the time, if you are managing your retirement with the same rules of portfolio management that you used during the accumulation years as part of a distribution portfolio, you're setting yourself up for failure. The rules change when you retire. Know what retirement planning is all about. Know how IRAs work, 401ks work, Social Security works. Know how Medicare works. Know how annuities work. Know how pensions work. Know how to position a portfolio for spending. That's what we specialize in on our firm. You're more than welcome to schedule what we call a coffee and a second opinion. And that is a phone call. No matter where you live in the United States, we're happy to entertain that phone call with you. And you can go to our website, jimhelps.com. That's Jim, helps.com, jimhelps.com. Click on the schedule a meeting button in the upper left-hand corner of the webpage, and you can schedule your own coffee in a second, a meeting phone call.
Perfect. So thanks, everybody, for joining us on this EDU show. Look forward to digging deep into a new topic next week on a brand new show.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.